Hello and welcome back to another episode of Boss Your Business. And today I am joined by Dr. Julie. You are an author, speaker, curiosity connoisseur. Ha! No tongue twister on that one, guys. And dinner party enthusiast. Ooh, we're going to have to talk food on this one. You were born in Saigon, Vietnam and raised in Seattle. Dr. Pham earned her PhD in history at Cambridge University as a Gates Cambridge Scholar, and she graduated magna cum laude from UC Berkeley, where she studied history. You also earned her real-life MBA by running your family's Vietnamese language newspaper during the 2008 to 2010 recession. And she also worked as a journalist, historian, marketer, nonprofit executive, community organizer, and management consultant. Damn, talk about a resume. You are kind of like fingers in everything too, aren't you?
There are definitely lots of career pivots as I try to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. So
have you figured out what you want to do when you grow up? Because I don't know if I have.
I can say that what I'm doing right now, I really am having a lot of fun. So at least as long as I'm having a lot of fun, then I'm going to stay put for a while.
Tell the audience, what are you doing right now before we dive into of how did you actually get here?
Okay, so what I'm doing right now is helping people practice curiosity in the world, starting it in the workplace, because that is where we spend most of our waking hours. Help people ask questions, listen to understand, tell stories.
I love that. So how specifically do you do that? Because I love the idea of not what I'm doing right now and just talking at people, but actually diving into those questions and more into deeper questions. So how do you help people get into that mindset of being curious?
So first, I just want to define curiosity a bit, because a lot of people talk about curiosity like it's a personality trait. You either have it or you don't. And it usually sounds like this: oh, we just need to be more curious, as in I'm curious and you need to be more curious and you're not curious. And actually, I think that everyone is curious. It's just that we don't always practice it. And so we liken curiosity to meditation. It looks really easy, yet it's so difficult to still our minds. And there are times where I don't feel like I want to practice curiosity, right? I feel like I know the answer and they need to listen to me. And so the first step to it is just admitting it. So we think of curiosity as a practice, as something we do. And it boils down to these three elements. The first is self-awareness. The second is relationship building. And the third is clear communication. And so when we take it in those steps like that, those elements like that, then it's just, we can appreciate, oh, this is why it can be hard to practice curiosity.
And it's like, we're also just humans, right? It's sometimes something just, I just need to get something out. And I don't care how your day was. And I'm laughing here because as a German coming to the States and still to this day, I have gotten better. But initially when I moved to the States, when the cashier at your grocery store is like, how are you today? And I'm like, you don't care. Why are you asking? You don't actually care. So I'm like, we do have days where it's like, okay, I just need to fill my own bucket right now, which means I just want to share my stuff and not necessarily ask all the questions. Mm-hmm. But it also can become a habit where especially as a coach or as a teacher or as an educator in general, where it's like, okay, I can see what you are doing. Don't do that. But it doesn't help people. So I love the idea of the self-awareness of Evie, shut up. You have a guest and actually ask her a question rather than going in a monologue. So I assume that's kind of like the similar how you work with your clients, where it's just like realize when you're doing the monologue. And how can you shift that?
Sometimes the monologue, actually, sometimes we need to have the monologue first, right? Because if we don't have the monologue first, then we go and we assume that they are thinking this and this and this. And the questions we might be asking them are based, actually have assumptions behind them, right? And so that first step of that self-awareness is actually just being curious about ourselves. Huh, what am I feeling right now? what am I, and what's that based on? And then the second part, the relationship building, is then, Evie, how do I be curious about you and ask you questions? And you, and then I'm going to react to what you shared with me. And then I'm going to share myself. And then you're going to react to me. And then that back and forth, that mutual curiosity, that's reciprocity. And we need to have reciprocity for relationship building. And I point this up because sometimes people think of curiosity as just learning something new. And so have you ever been in those conversations where someone's just asking you all these questions and then you don't learn anything about them?
Yep.
They haven't shared anything themselves. They've just asked you all these questions. And so I do think actually a part of practicing curiosity is the back and forth of that, that relationship building. Mm-hmm. And then the third part, the clear communication, this is listening to understand, asking questions when we don't understand. And this last one is key, sharing specific stories and examples, not speaking abstracts. And when we haven't actually done that first part, the self-awareness part, then it could be so easy to slip into abstracts because we don't actually know the story yet. So we just say, this is important. This is why we should do it.
And that comes, the last one comes back to one of my things where I'm always like, okay, how specifically? Because perception is so different. It's like, I always use the example of when I say, think of a color red, the chances are the shade of red you are thinking of is different of the shade of red that I'm thinking of. So having that communication, having specific examples, and really asking what specifically do you mean to get the understanding of how the other person is perceiving everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did all of this come about? I'm like, I love the idea of curiosity and having those conversations and asking the questions and sharing. But I'm pretty sure that little Julie didn't start out and saying, I'm out here to make people more curious. How did you get here?
So Evie, I got to tell you, I don't think I was very curious in the beginning. So even though I had spent the first part of my career training as an academic and in pursuit of new knowledge. And so as an academic, there's a particular kind of curiosity, right? To accumulate knowledge and to disprove other people's knowledge. They're right. I'm wrong. Look at my body of research. I'm more rigorous. And so when I was finishing up my PhD, I came out, right? And I came back to Seattle to help run my family's Vietnamese newspaper. My parents founded the first privately owned Vietnamese newspaper in the Pacific Northwest. And I started to do a lot of community service. I was getting my real life MBA, and in this was a lot of volunteering. And Evie, I got to tell you how frustrated I was in the beginning, because it was like, why are we spending so much time talking? We know what we need to do. Why don't we just get straight to it? What's all with these icebreakers, right? And I was so frustrated.
Oh my God, I hear my story.
Right?
I was so
frustrated. And then I realized I wasn't having fun. Other people around me seemed to be having fun. And I also watched the way that my parents did business, especially my father, and I could see that how much relationship building was taking place. And that I actually had to slow down because there was a lot of learning that could take place just from the other people there, because we were coming from such different backgrounds. Actually, one of the things that I first started to do was, I started to work at the newspaper during the Great Recession, and this is the global decline of newspapers everywhere.
Yeah.
And I started to mobilize what is called, referred to as ethnic media. So the different organizations that serve the Chinese community, Spanish speaking, Somali, all of these different specific ethnic niche communities, we're coming from really different backgrounds. We have different expectations of how to treat one another. And so that I had to slow down and realize that another way to learn was from actually the people who I was collaborating with. And so I would say that that community building helped make me realize, to be more curious with the people who I was with. And then fast forward, I was working in the newspaper for a few years. And then I moved over to tech. I worked in the tech industry for 9 years. And then I got my second, while working in tech and I got my second real life PhD in organizational development. And I actually created this cross-sector collaboration fellowship, bringing together tech, government, and community-based organizations.
Now that's something to bring together. I'm like, okay.
And because, you know, it's just, there's all these different ways to think about diversity. And I'm actually really fascinated by sector diversity as well, because the private sector, the public sector, the nonprofit sector. And in any case, what I saw here, because I created this fellowship that ran for 6 months, and I did this 5 different times. And in this, people just had to collaborate and create something out of nothing. They had no budget. They had a very short time span. And Evie, what I saw was some people really struggled and some people really thrived. And it took me over a year, 2 cohorts to figure out what was happening, because I started to study that. And I realized it had to do with curiosity. It had to do with curiosity. The people who were struggling were those who were really fixated on a certain outcome. And they were like, here's the plan. This is the impact we're going to have. And, you know, when did things go exactly to plan?
Right? you're asking the non-recovering perfectionist.
Right. Yeah. And so they really struggled. And then there were the people who were just, oh my gosh, look at what we're learning. I had no idea. We created something out of nothing, and they were having a lot of fun. And so what we saw was, on these teams, if there was a critical mass of people who were so excited about what they were learning, it could uplift the morale of a team. And the inverse was true. The teams where people were so fixated on a certain outcome, if they had a critical mass, they could bring down the morale.
Ooh.
Because here's the thing. There are bystanders on the team, right? There are people who are just waiting to see what the energy is on the team. And they could be uplifted or they could be brought down. And so that's when I realized, so Evie, you asked me, how did I get to curiosity, right? I would say that first part, realizing I'm not very curious, learning how to build relationships, because I really think that's the strength of curiosity, is the human connection. And then in this case, seeing that it could also help people, it could help with collaboration. It could help with connection. And then, Evie, I just want to say, I learned how to ask a question. I determined one question, because that I would bring to the people who really struggled.
Uh-huh.
Because I got to say, in the beginning, I made the mistake of trying to save them. The people who were just so checked out. It's like, let me make you happy. How do I make this experience good for you? And they always left, no matter what. But by the third cohort, I learned to ask one question.
Okay, now I'm curious, because that's completely aligned with what a lot of coaches and consultants do, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I've been there. I've done that. I know what your issue is. Here's the solution. And people are like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's that question?
The question is, do you think you can learn from other people here? Do you think you can learn from other people here? Do you think you can learn from your teammates? And there would be people who are like,
no,
to be honest, no. Or like, yeah, but it's going to take me too long and it's just not going to be worth my time, because you're asking me for a lot of time. And then I'd say, okay, that's all right. Let's get you off this team. Let's get you out of the program. Because if they don't feel that they can learn from the other people there, for whatever reasons, right? They're busy with their life. They're just like, I've already done this. For whatever reasons, that's okay. I don't need to explore that with them. I don't need to convince them. They've already told me that they don't think that they can learn from other people here. And there are other people I can bring into the program who are just, yes, I can. I want to. And you know, Evie, the other thing that was really interesting, because this program had people in really different, really junior in their career and really senior in their career. And it was actually typically the people who are more junior in their career who did not feel that they could learn from other people there.
Ooh, because they haven't ended up on their nose yet and realize you can learn from everybody.
And the people who were senior, they were in the program because they were just, I don't want to be the boss. I don't want to make decisions. I'm the boss all the time. I don't want to be the boss here. I just want to learn. I just want to be a student like everyone else. And they had a lot of fun because they felt like they also had the freedom to explore, which in their daytime jobs, it could be harder, right? Because it's just their people are looking to them to make quick decisions.
Yep.
And so it was so that question really helped. It really helped me understand. So the experience of helping people practice curiosity is helping them create this environment where people feel they can learn from each other, that they want to learn from each other. And it's okay if you are in a workplace where you're just, I don't think I can learn from people here. Because then the second question is, then should you be here?
How can
because
you
if
change
you don't
that?
Think that you can learn from other people here, mm-hmm. it can't, how are other people supposed to spend energy trying to convince you that they are worth learning from?
Now, my question now also is, you talked about the ones that are so fixated on the goals versus the ones that are curious and just want to learn. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think, how can you combine those? Because mm-hmm. I'm like, being goal-oriented is often what drives that. It's how we measure things. It's how we get data. Mm-hmm. So how do you think you can combine that curiosity and that goal focus with each other? Or are we completely off and we shouldn't focus on goals?
I just think the goal can, if we have the goal of, hey, we want to, for example, I'm thinking of one particular project where it was, they wanted to highlight art in a community. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning they thought, oh, it's going to have to look like exactly like this. But then it's just, oh, the way we do it changed. But we still got that sentiment, right? And so it's kind of just, hey, are we generally in the right direction? And maybe that how changed, but we still make people feel an appreciation for art. And that's really what our original goal was. And so it's kind of not getting so fixated on how it has to look and getting and thinking more about what is the impact that you, what was that greater impact that you want to have? Maybe success. I mean, you know, when I worked at the newspaper, one of my hard lessons, my brother and I actually bought half the newspaper from our parents. But there were two editions to the newspaper. There was the weekday edition and the weekend edition. So we bought the weekday edition. And after 2 years, we did all of these things. We quadrupled the distribution area. We tripled circulation. We were able to increase profit margins. But the weekend edition, my parents' edition, was suffering. So we had to shut down our edition. Sometimes you have to cut off the limb to save the body. Does that mean that we weren't successful? No, I learned a lot. I learned so much in those 2 years, right? And in the end, we made the decision, let's save the bigger edition, even if that means closing down our own. So I think it's really about readjusting, being open to what we think that success is, what that goal is going to be. It's not, and keeping that general, are we still serving our newspaper readers? Yes, we are. Is it how we thought we would? No, it changed.
So it's that rather than just being fixated on what we think, how we're going to reach the goal, having that agility to adjust and just be open-minded and curious to external things that are popping up or just mm-hmm. in general of, hey, this is more fun or hey, this is where things are going and just being agile with it.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, one of the things that when my team, when we start to do something, when we experiment with something new and it's just, okay, there's going to be risk here. And so we go in and it's just like, all right, let's just keep in mind, yes, there's what we achieve. And there's also, what are we going to learn from this? No matter what will we learn from this experiment, from this investment, even if we don't get what we thought? I can tell you, I thought that when we created our first digital course that it would make gads of money because I was listening to all these content creators like, yes, I'm now making 7 figures in my first 6 months. So not the case. So not the case, right? I was just like, all right, but we learned a lot as we did that. And you know, we actually followed the formula. We did all the things we were supposed to do. And then there's this other thing called luck, right? So that we can't control. It's like, all right, well, yep. You know, we worked hard. We felt really proud of our product. Does that mean that we were absolute failures because we didn't get the levels of achievement that all of these tests, the big testimonials? It's like, No.
And it's funny you brought that specific example up, because we are literally working on a group coaching program right now where it's like, yeah, it's like courses are the thing to do it. One-on-one are the thing to do it, or whatever it is. And I'm like, it comes back down again to you actually enjoying what you are doing and having the platform and having the right voice for it. It comes back down to our insides and not everything else. Can you make a good amount of money with courses? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you make a good amount of one-on-ones? Yeah. Or VIP days or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, what's your core values? Because you're going to show up like that too. And what are the resources you already have? Mm-hmm. But that's for a whole nother episode. Mm-hmm. So how do you work nowadays with clients? How are you working one-on-one? Do you still have your courses out there? How do you work with your clients?
So the bulk of our work is learning experiences, live learning experiences, whether that's in person or that's virtual. So even though we have a digital course that's based on my book called Seven Forms of Respect, the bulk of our revenue is actually from live sessions. And so they're all group. We don't do anything that's one-on-one. Whenever someone's just, do you do one-on-one coaching? I'm like, no, but I can refer you to people. And that's because we just try to create spaces for people to learn from one another. I'm actually doing very, very little lecturing. It's very interactive. We give people a series of prompts that increase the level of challenge and vulnerability, and we just create a space for them to learn from one another, which means people can go through the same module over and over again with different colleagues and learn something new.
That's a different experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's how we work with our clients. And then we have work around goal setting, around organizational culture, belonging, inclusion, and communication skills. And all of that, underpinned by all of that, is this practice in curiosity. We keep bringing that up again and again. It's just, we've got to be curious about ourselves, curious about other people, and let them be curious about us. And then also to listen, to understand, ask questions to when we don't understand, and to tell stories. I mean, Evie, there are the self-awareness. One of my favorite stats, most people think that they're self-aware, yet only 10 to 15% of them actually are. Have you heard that one? And
that's a stat right there. Like, I can see it, because I personally have been over the last year on a journey of being more self-aware, of paying attention, how I have communications, the relationships I'm building, but also me, myself, and my own talk. So mm-hmm. I'm surprised by the number, but I'm not surprised, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think that anyone who tells you that they're absolutely self-aware, that they're the ones who probably are. Because, I mean, I know I have tons of blind spots. And the thing about practicing curiosity is we actually do it in community. And so I will actually become more self-aware from other people. And that's the only, so I always get frustrated with people who say they just need to be more self-aware. I'm like, how do you think they get that by themselves? They don't miraculously get that on their own. Another stat I love is that 70% of people actually face barriers asking questions at work. And that could be I don't want to waste time. That could be, I'm afraid of asking questions and revealing I don't know. That could be, I mean, actually, and this is, I find this the case when we work with consultants, as in when we are working, our client are their consulting groups. It's amazing how they feel that they need to provide answers and that their questions are very kind of very pointed to show how they actually can deliver an answer.
And that, When you said that, my brain went into multiple different directions of the experts, because we are supposed to be the experts. We're not supposed to have questions, right? And I'm like, I can't know everything. Mm-hmm. So makes complete sense to me. And then you brought up in the work environment, and I have experienced that with my own team. My core team is in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I love my three-piece core team, love them to pieces. But there is such a a location-based difference mm-hmm. where over the last few months, we literally have a weekly meeting scheduled now so that I can make them more comfortable in asking questions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, we are supposed to be here to just do the work. I'm like, yeah, but you can't know everything. Get mm-hmm. involved. Go have fun. And it's been fun seeing that change in them being comfortable to ask, in being comfortable to say no, being comfortable to just blossom in their work. If that's, yeah.
Yes. And as the boss, we have to model that. We have to model, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know the answer. Or what does that acronym mean? I've never heard that word before. And there are times where I get really embarrassed. I'm like, I should know that word, but oh, I'm just going to ask anyway.
And then we have to model that. And it's like, we have days where my audience knows on the podcast, it's not being edited and I have tongue twisters. It just happens. Mm-hmm. And the same way I have calls with the team where I'm like, wait, what? How, what, where I just had a busy day or just having a brain fart going on. Or it's just like, oh, that's what you were talking about. Got it. It's like.
Well, and I also think that when we talk about people who are problem solvers, that's very prized in our society, right? I'm a problem solver. I'm very solutions oriented. And what we don't, and that's great. Yet the thing is, I also like to, sometimes in that solution orientation, it's like, it's just, oh, is that it? No, is that it? No, no. And we don't pause and slow down to say, what is this problem teaching me? What is this problem teaching me? And mm-hmm. asking that question can feel like it's slowing down. And yet actually it could help us learn something much bigger. Because how often do we get into the, okay, now we have to go start doing it this way. And then it's just, wait, no, let's take a step back. I think mm-hmm. that there's a bigger philosophical question we need to ask before we can get to the how, get to the possible solutions.
Yes, yes, yes to all of the above. It's interesting because I experience that a lot with my clients when it comes to process mapping and things. When I often work with the ones that are not technology challenged, that are problem aware and want to find the solution, mm-hmm. where I literally have to say, I'm like, okay, I appreciate you bringing all the ideas of how we can solve this, even though you hired me for that. We need to step back. What's the actual overlaying goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And then let's go nitty gritty again to see if we have the right solution. Mm-hmm. But first of all, I'm like, let's start up here. I love that.
Well, no. even with your clients, it's just, are you willing to learn from the consultant that you hired? Right?
I am lucky enough that I have not had a client in a long time that hired me as the expert and then tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. I am lucky on that. We had those. I had clients in the past, fortunately not in a long time, that hired me to just get the approval stamp of me telling them that they are doing it right. Unfortunately, they didn't. But that's a whole nother story. Listening comes with curiosity, too. And now, for everybody really being curious, you have some goodies for the audience. You have a quiz for them. You have a book. Tell them a little bit about it. And guys, as always, you're going to find the links in the description.
Yeah, so I have this book called 7 Forms of Respect. It's about how respect is dynamic, relative, subjective, and contradictory. And so you can go to formsofrespect.com and you can get a free mini book. There's also a free 2-week crash course and a free quiz. So you can go there and learn more about it. You can also get the book on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble, anything like that. And then also you can find me at curiositybased.com. That's the main website. I am most active on LinkedIn. So I'd love for you to connect with me.
Love it. And guys, as always, you know, the links are all in the description. You're going to find all of that. So make sure you click on that LinkedIn link. Pop into Dr. Jolie's inbox. Tell her you watched the episode and connect with her. Thanks so much for coming onto the podcast today. As always, it's always really curious to see where episodes guide us. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Evie.